You're listening to Simpler, One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. This is episode 98 of the Common Good Podcast with co-host Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature part two of a presentation by John Deere of Pache Ebene and Campaign Nonviolence. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee Economics Ministries. Well, I think I said this in part one of this presentation by John Deere, how glad I am that you reconnected with him. I'm also just so impressed with how strong his presentation is. And in the second part, I was so impressed as I was listening to it how much he emphasizes that peacemaking, efforts toward peace, though we follow the big summits and all of that, and they're important. But he really emphasizes that the most powerful movement for peace is from the bottom up, that we need a movement of global nonviolence. What an amazing invitation and challenge that is to all of us to participate in how to live nonviolently in the world. And he's just so strong on that. He just makes that case so strong. It doesn't sound mundane or just like common sense. I mean, he makes common sense very powerful, which of course it is. When we really absorb what common sense means. And I like the way he really emphasizes that we need to rise up to total nonviolence. That just challenges me to my core in how to live in total nonviolence. I know I'm not there, and I don't even have the consciousness to do it, but I just loved being challenged the way he presented it in this presentation. And then I also just want to say one more thing, Jerry, before you take us into part two here shortly. I'm so pleased that he is making nonviolence part of how we treat the earth. This isn't only between nations, between peoples, between individuals, and peace with ourselves. It's all of that, and it's also how do we behave in nonviolence to the earth? How do we create systems that stop being so aggressive to the earth? How do we allow earth to show us the way to peace? So this is a wonderful presentation that he gives, and lead us into it again today, however you want to do it, Jerry.
Well, Lee, I was reintroduced to John's work when I heard him speak twice on the Central Coast of California early in 2018. Especially poignant for me was his unwillingness to accept meditation and inner peace as sufficient for a life of peace. He said emphatically, we need feet on the ground, we need action, we need people in the streets. You'll notice he consistently uses peace and nonviolence together. The word peace, like the word love, by itself is too easily manipulated. It must always be accompanied by nonviolence. While I prepared for this conversation, I listened to John's recent presentation in Madison, Wisconsin, and realized that he covered all three topics that I wanted to cover. First, his life story. Second, his new book, They Will Inherit the Earth, Peace and Nonviolence in a Time of Climate Change. And third, the Campaign Nonviolence Week of Actions coming in September, about the same time as the UN's International Peace Day, September 21st. So he gave us permission to use the audio from that presentation. His passion is inspiring. In the previous episode, John told his personal story. We continue in this episode with John's new book and also the Campaign Nonviolence Week of Action.
6 million species about to go extinct in the next few decades. You know all of this. But it's so overwhelming to think about it that we can't, and we don't. But I think if we're going to rise to the occasion like Dr. King and honor him and our own humanity, We want to look at it. And to say a word about climate change, I mean, you know it more than me, but in a nutshell, the fossil fuel's been digging up all this oil and gas and coal and filling the atmosphere with carbon over the last 100 years, so the Earth's temperature has risen, so the ice, polar ice caps are melting, so the ocean levels are rising, so the temperature and the waves and the oceans and the super rich are getting richer in the hottest years ever recorded, and now what? Floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, superstorms, rain bombs, fires, droughts. And 100 years of this, it's just science. You know, as I've been studying it these really hard these last few years, you know, 37% of the human race lives along the ocean. They all have to flee. Hundreds upon hundreds of millions of people will be refugees in 50 years. And the scientists say, easy, 100 wars headed toward, or global warfare over land and water as we've unleashed this. That means that we can't take one fossil fuel out of the ground ever again. We have to use alternative energy, wind and solar. And the only way that's going to happen is a global grassroots bottom-up movement, the likes of which the world has never seen. And that's the good news of Dr. King. That's the incredible good news, which I invite you to really own now more than ever. There's a way out. A way forward, a way through this insanity, which is active, creative, daring, public, organized, people power, grassroots, bottom-up, global movements of nonviolence that when we wield this methodology of social change, always works. We know that now. Dr. Erica Chenoweth, probably one of the leading intellectuals of the planet, has studied every war and revolution from 1900 to 2010. It's just science. And I don't know if you've read her book. It's like reading the phone book. I don't understand it. It's just math. And she's proved Gandhi was right. We know this now. And wherever nonviolence was worked, it led to a nonviolent resolution. I mean, tried, and nonviolent democracies. And there have been like 80 nonviolent revolutions or transformations the last 40 years. And there's thousands of movements happening right now. So Dr. King says nonviolence is a way of life. It's a spiritual path toward a future of peace and the God of peace. It's a tactic and a strategy, but it's a political methodology. But I, as I'm saying this, I'm going, you know, if Dr. King were here, he'd go, John does not get it. He'd be saying, nonviolence is power. You're not powerless. No, we are powerless. There's nothing we can do, Dr. King. That's what the TV says. It's exactly what the culture of war and insanity wants us to believe. There's nothing you can do. And don't try to think you make a difference or you end up like Martin. It's the age-old methodology of empire, which is crucify the movement leaders, kill them. And that just leads to further contagion of nonviolence. And this is what we're about, trying to be to build this movement and institutionalize nonviolence. You know, I don't know if you know, but as he's walking out on the balcony, he turned to Bernard Lafayette, my friend, and said, make a note, Bernard, once we finish this poor people's campaign and get economic justice and then close down the Pentagon and end the war in Vietnam, make a note, we're going to globalize nonviolence. Institutionalize nonviolence and internationalize nonviolence. So this is our mission. I thought you'd laugh at that too, but I just pushes all my buttons. So I've been trying to unpack this, and I wrote this book, The Nonviolent Life. What is Martin saying? How do we reach the holistic level of nonviolence that Jesus and Dr. King are teaching? So I define nonviolence as requiring three simultaneous attributes, if you're with me for a second. Number one, this is when you talk about it and teach it, which is what I invite you to do. We have to be really nonviolent to ourselves. And I think we're really sick as a people in this country. And we've internalized violence. We're victims of violence, and we beat ourselves up. You and I, we're going to try not to do that anymore. We're going to teach our young people to cultivate interior nonviolence, to make peace with yourself and welcome the God of peace to live with you. But at the same time, number two, to practice meticulous interpersonal nonviolence toward everybody in your life, every human being you know and meet from now on, nonviolence to your spouse, your children, your parents, your neighbor, everybody in the church, Going to be rough. Everybody in Madison, in Wisconsin, and the country, and the world, and the creatures, and Mother Earth. How's that going for you? And third, at the same time, you have to have 1 foot in the global grassroots movement of nonviolence that's going to change the world. Yeah, I can see you didn't like my 3 points. See, I think we're good at one of those. Maybe some of us might reach two, but very few reach the level of Dr. King. Because there's in, like, for example, in the churches, a lot of, how shall I put this? Bless me for I have sinned. There's a lot of nice people. I don't know that that's Christianity or nonviolence. And I'm not saying don't be nice. That's presumed. I'm talking about, like, as somebody said to me 35 years ago when I started this, she said, well, I'm going to spend my life being perfectly peaceful. And once I reach perfect peace, then I'll get involved in the movement. That's American heresy. But the flip side is also true. There's a lot of us really involved. We're hardcore activists and we're mad. And we're all for peace. It's just not working. And isn't that kind of the myth of the 60s? I don't know, you tell me, that didn't sustain, anger doesn't sustain you. Whereas Dr. King and Jesus are talking about this holistic thing. Well, so I've been trying to ponder this and study the movements and then this mysterious teaching of Jesus in this time. So, you know, I wrote about, I wrote about life on the Mesa in New Mexico, and then I've been working as the pastor of the little Catholic community in Yosemite, of all places. I was telling friends at dinner, that's why Yosemite's on the cover. But, you know, living in Yosemite, which I do periodically, the most beautiful place on the planet, maybe, it's been very painful learning from the locals. 1/3 of the trees are dead. Half the animals are gone. The waterfalls disappeared for 7 years because of the droughts. It's all about to burn down. And then I met with the great women indigenous leaders at the Pueblo, and write about them in the book, my friend Marian Naranjo. Now imagine, Oppenheimer came in and stole Los Alamos, this spectacular mountain, from this particular Pueblo, the Santa Clara Pueblo. So the Pueblo has only half its land now. They're the second poorest county in the world, in the country, whereas Los Alamos is the second richest. And they're fighting hunger and cancer, total poverty, and war making, and nuclear weapons on their land. Every single nuclear bomb has been built there. And then Oppenheimer dumped the radioactive waste down onto the indigenous community, highest cancer rate in the country. And I went to her and I said, so what did Jesus mean between blessed are the actively people of nonviolence like Martin Luther King and they shall be one with the earth? And she looked at me like, gosh, you're not bright. I thought that was pretty funny. You're just so clear. You're totally one with the earth. That the earth is teaching us what Jesus meant and Dr. King meant. This is lovely to hear this. And the resistance and the total nonviolence of this great lady. I write about my experiences at Standing Rock. Maybe some of you went there during the campaign to stop the pipeline. And so many others. But maybe I could end with just what I'm learning, some basic points about this beatitude connection and our life of resistance. And I have like 6 points, if you can bear with me. First, and it's... Well, I'm just going to say it. In light of all of this stuff that we're looking at, including that even talking about using nuclear weapons as if this is a reasonable, normal thing to do. You know, we're so close to the threat of nuclear war now. But the destruction of the Earth, the only nation on the planet not formally committed through the Paris Accords to working to stop environmental destruction. The world has never agreed on something before like this. We're the only, this is mind-blowing. So the first response, according to all the leaders around of the movements around the world and all the spiritual teachers around the world, in light of this, is grief. If you care, if you want to go deeper, If you are a person who is one with the 7.2 billion people on the planet, most of whom are suffering, and the creatures and Mother Earth, we're all grieving, as you know, friends, but we're not allowed to in this culture. And you're supposed to be angry, or you're supposed to be depressed, or you're supposed to be despairing, or you better be afraid. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, avoid all of those things. And the only person I know who really took that seriously was Gandhi. Up until the week he died, he was saying, I've been trying to not to get into anger and fear because Jesus said so. But what did he say in the sentence before this one? The second sentence of the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are those who mourn. They will be comforted. I encourage you as activists and organizers now to take time to grieve as a spiritual discipline, to really feel what's happening with your heart. And maybe we'll be blessed to have our hearts broken. And that will help us lead to greater compassion, because the goal is universal compassion. And universal compassion always leads to action, which is the ultimate goal. And so when Jesus arrives to Jerusalem, he breaks down sobbing, if this day you had only known the things that make for peace. And then he takes nonviolent action through civil disobedience. That's the way it works. He also recommends joy, which is really helpful. And we're not very good at that. You know, grief and joy, but anger and fear, they're like our best things. Well, anyway, maybe I touched a nerve there. I don't know. Second, we have to rise to total nonviolence. We want to become as nonviolent as possible, like Dr. King. Where is nonviolence challenging you these days? How can you go deeper, especially those of you who've been working on these issues for so long? What does it mean in your heart and soul and your relationships and part of the movement? And how can we help one another? Everybody in Madison and Wisconsin, get rid of your guns, quit the military, don't join the military, join the movement to resist the culture of violence, because we're working to transform it into a culture of nonviolence. Well, that means you have to be part of a group, because you cannot do this on your own. And we need to form more and more affinity groups and peace and justice groups and nonviolence groups and be part of them to help each other on this journey. Third, I would say, how can we deepen our solidarity with the earth, becoming more and more one with Mother Earth and the creatures? Well, I think we all have to become Buddhists at some level. As my friend Thich Nhat Hanh says, we have to practice real mindfulness. But I'm talking about the political, economic, and racial injustice implications of mindfulness, where we're really attentive to the trees and the birds and the lakes around here and the earth, and really attentive to one another and really living in the present moment of peace, and let nature heal us is such a gift. But that means reflecting on how we live, what we wear, what we eat. You know, when I started, I don't know about you all, but like 10 years ago in the movement, the big thing was, I don't know, you hear Bill McKibben say it, light bulbs. You remember that? You all are so far ahead of the rest of the country. That was not your, in New Mexico, that's all, change your light bulbs. Nobody is saying that now, is what I'm trying to tell you. You still have to change your light bulbs. You have to avoid plastic. You've got to go solar. I'm so sorry. You've got to become vegetarian, because that's really the cattle releasing the methane, which is really part of the carbon and the raising of the temperature. And the UN has been issuing these desperate reports about all of that. But what can we do to really, really change our lives to rise to a new level? I would say this leads me to my fourth point, to connect the dots, to try not to just be isolated on just one issue, which we may have a passion for, but to see that if you care for the earth, you got to work to stop racism and sexism and warfare and corporate greed and nuclear weapons and the destruction of the creatures. That it's all one spectrum of violence, just as it's all one holistic vision of nonviolence. Well, you know all this. I'm just trying to figure it out for myself.
We'll return momentarily to the presentation by John Deere. I want to call your attention in this break time to a bit of news. It was a bit of news, but it was big news that happened this last week in Washington, D.C. I say this last week because it happened just 2 days ago from the time that we're actually recording this episode of the Common Good podcast. I'm referring to the launch of Medicare for All Caucus, that was formed by 62 House Democrats, and they're demanding health care for every American from the day they're born. So just let me read a paragraph from the announcement that was on the Common Dreams website. It said, with the enthusiastic backing of America's largest nurses union, consumer advocates, sustainable business groups, and the majority of the American public, 62 House Democrats on Thursday officially launched the Medicare for All caucus, which will be devoted to closely examining the gritty policy specifics of single payer while working toward one straightforward moral goal, which is guaranteeing every American health care from the day they're born. Well, this this announcement is a nice reminder of a great episode 94 that we did. I call it great because I think it really was. It was so timely. Time for Health Care for All, we called it. And two people that we interviewed spoke of how the health care plan in California is coming along, in which the majority now won it. So our episodes continue to bring to do things that are happening in the news. We try to make that connection, and that's the connection that of an episode 94 that really works with the news of this past week. Well, let's return now to John Deere's presentation on peacemaking, peace with nonviolence.
All of this leads to my fifth point, action. Our only hope, the way positive change, as you know, always happens through history, is bottom-up grassroots movements, period. From Jesus to the abolitionists, the suffragists, the civil rights movement, anti-Vietnam War movement, the women's movement, the environmental movement, and all the thousands of movements now, it's movement, bottom-up organizing is how change happens. If you have been involved in this struggle, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for all you've done in your lives for justice and peace and creation. And I urge you to be at it till the day you die. If you're not, or your friends and family are not, keep inviting people to join the struggle because we need everybody now. Everybody's got to be involved. Did you hear Joan Baez on All Things Considered the other day saying, whatever you've been doing, you got to double it, triple it, and quadruple it now. Saturdays are for marching. That's what, the new normal, the new ordinary. And, you know, if you're thinking, oh, look, I was been involved since the 60s. I just want to tell you, I went to South Africa to spend time with Archbishop Tutu a few years ago. And I go to see him, and I walk in the room. He's a little guy, and he comes up to me. There's no hello. How's your trip? He grabs me by the collar and he goes, John, you and I have to work for justice and peace till the day we die. Are there any questions? You see my point. We're not off the hook. And so this is the message I've learned. And if we want to be part of, we don't know what's going to happen. We're not going to live to see the change we want, but we're going to be part of the movement, and we're going to sow seeds for a harvest of peace and justice one day, because that's how nonviolence works, by being doing our part every single day for the global grassroots movement of nonviolence. Everybody can make a difference. Everybody could be Rosa Parks, that tipping point person. You don't have to be Dr. King. But we need legislation to end all these wars and the poverty and the racism and abolish the nuclear weapons and protect the earth, which means you're just going to have to vote everybody out. And a whole new generation of visionary leaders. And how about those kids? They're just spectacular. We were talking earlier, and I've been trying to study them, and about 10 of them were hardcore activists before the massacre happened. That's what, it was amazing. And they were arguing about Trump and organizing. They were on, well, that night on the way home, that Wednesday night on February 14th, in the car, a group of them said, we have to start speaking out. The next day, they rented an office at the mall. They didn't have any money. They set up these Twitter accounts and Never Again. They launched all of that, and they started thinking on their speeches, and then George Clooney gives them $500,000, and only the three or four other celebrities, they gave them $2 million, but they raised 8 million more. The kids, they're brilliant, and they're just. I mean, that one kid gets up there and goes, his opening sentence, "Welcome to the revolution." I'm going, now these are the kids. The other says, "My message to the politicians: if you're not on our side getting rid of gun violence, start working on your resumes." It's great. Anyway. This is how how nonviolence works. We don't know. Joan Baez keeps saying, I have it wrong, it's organic. And I say, no, you have it wrong, it's organized. But maybe it's all of that. And then it just becomes contagious. All this movement building one day kicks in. And the only way it's going to continue to grow is if we all are part of it. That's the great lesson of Dr. King's life. And I encourage you, like those kids who are showing us the way, not just to be an activist, but to speak out and to be an organizer. Now, you know this, but no one else is going to organize. We all have to do that. We have the new Poor People's Campaign coming up, and it's got issues here in Wisconsin in terms of organized. Pitch in. And can I give you my own little commercial plug? You've seen my blue pamphlet. This is the group I work with, Campaign Nonviolence. And 5 years ago, my friend and I, Ken, were saying, well, there's nothing much happening around the country. We want the movement to get moving. So we said, let's call for a national week of action. We picked around September 21st, the International Peace Day, for a whole week. And let's invite the whole country just to take to the streets and march against everything. Racism, war, poverty, nuclear weapons, environmental destruction, and for Dr. King's vision of nonviolence. I hired a big PR firm. Nobody would cover it, including Amy Goodman. And hundreds of people's actions happened. This September, September 15th to the 23rd, will be our fifth National Week of Action. And we're already on track for 2,000 actions and marches to happen. No national coverage, but the movement is moving. And we're connecting the dots. And we're speaking of nonviolence in terms of our own lives and as the way forward in a Gandhian, Kingian strategy and lifting up a vision of nonviolence. I invite you to be part of it here in Madison. You know, it's an organizing tool. Have you heard of Little Rock, Arkansas? Last year they had 35 events in September. It had a huge impact on the whole state for the election later on. Because, you know, when you get involved, if you marched on March 24th, it's heartening. And you feel new energy, and you come together. We're not powerless. This is what happened. Have you heard of Wilmington, Delaware? Last year, they had 62 events against everything. And it's changing Delaware. So I invite you to think about doing something here or a series of events. Secondly, we've called for a national march on Saturday, September 22nd, from the Dr. King statue, in strict silence, like Gandhian satyagrahis, to the Lafayette Park in front of the White House, where some of us will step into Pennsylvania Avenue and engage in illegal activity, and you're all cordially invited to join me. Third, we've launched this project called Nonviolent Cities. I was speaking in Carbondale, Illinois, and the activist there 10 years ago said, nothing's working. What would Martin say? Well, he'd say the future of Carbondale is it has to become completely nonviolent. And they said, that's a good idea. And they launched the Nonviolent Carbondale Movement. So the activists started a meeting with the city council, and then the mayor, and then over the years, the police department, the healthcare system, the school system. And now it's becoming a mainstream idea that the vision of our city is to become a Kingian nonviolent city. So I pitched to the country, we have 50 cities working on becoming a nonviolent city. We just launched Nonviolent Cincinnati. 400 people came out, including the vice mayor and the city council. And they have all these problems there, but it's a vision. And one of the great casualties of this culture of violence and war is the loss of vision, total blindness, the loss of the imagination. You and I, as activists and people who care, trying to reclaim the imagination for what we could be. What Madison could be and Wisconsin could be. It's such an important place. Your struggle is so important. A nonviolent Madison, a nonviolent Wisconsin. So I encourage you to think about all of that. Well, you're just sitting there going, well, good luck with that, John. You know, like, but you know what Dr. King said 50 years ago, 2 weeks ago, when he first arrived in Memphis? It's so touching. He said, Jim Lawson told me this. He stood up and he said, because he never talked about hope ever in his life. It's not in any of his writings. He's so magical because what he did worked, like everything he did. But in the end, everybody was turning against him. And he saw that they were going to kill him and these campaigns were not going to work. So he started to figure out what his hope meant. He was going to write a book about it. And he gets to Memphis and he says, tonight, I'm announcing my definition of hope. What does hope mean for you as we reflect on these big, awful issues and terrors, and this beautiful beatitude and the way of methodology of nonviolence? Dan told me when I was a kid, if you want to be hopeful, you have to do hopeful things. It's a lovely teaching. Martin stood in the pulpit and said, my definition of hope is, hope is the final refusal to give up. I think it's a very profound teaching. And I invite you and I to be the people who are not going to give up. We're going to keep on working for justice and peace and creation through the way of active nonviolence in the tradition of Jesus and his Beatitudes to Dr. King and all the struggling millions around the planet, no matter what, knowing that our lives, we're going to do the good because it's good. We're going to do what's right because it's right. And we're going to leave the outcome in the hands of the God of peace and join hands together and try to live and welcome that whole new world of nonviolence which you and I envision. I really thank you so much for listening to me, and I just encourage you, arise and walk forth. Thanks for listening to me, you all.
Thank you so much, John. So I'm going to turn the mic over here to Peter, who has an announcement for us.
1985, if you remember, I can see from the gray hairs that some of you can take that journey with me. Ronald Reagan announced the deployment of the Pershing missiles across Europe on the border with the Soviet Union, reducing the reaction time for the nuclear button to, what, 20 seconds. And the bulletin atomic scientists removed that atomic clock to 1 minute to midnight. At that point, some wag in New York came up with a poster. We may have lost many of the battles, but we won all the songs and all the posters. And the poster said, wouldn't it be great if the Air Force had to have bake sales to build the B-1 bomber? Well, it didn't work out that way yet. We still run on fumes. This is not a Joan Collins book. Father John is really doing this on his own dime, and I really would urge you to give generously. I'm a recycler by day and St. Patrick's Day. I will be coming from this side, urging you to help contribute so Father John can keep this going. And we also have, as a special treat, Beth has a fancy high-tech thing for credit cards, and she'll start from that end.
Wow.
The checks should be made out to
For John. If we do a
wow.
check. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And with that, while we're doing that, why don't we not waste time and go right to the Q&A?
Okay. Thanks, Peter. Gosh.
Yeah. So if anyone has a question for John, please raise your hand and I'll try to get to you. We have about 10 minutes for this, so we'll try to keep the questions brief.
Yes, I'm wondering about leadership with movements. The Occupy group was criticized in many ways for not having a leader. Sometimes a leader is useful, sometimes it's not. Can you reflect on having leadership in movements? Obviously, we're reflecting tonight on the success of having Dr. King as a leader in his movement. But for future movements, how should we proceed? Thank you so much.
Wow, what a great question. And I don't think anybody is resolved on that. Everybody's conflicted. And the Occupy movement was certainly adamant, we are leaderless, the people are the leaders, and it fell apart. In my opinion, it did not work. And that's what I see the great theorists of movement building saying. You need everything. You don't necessarily need a charismatic leader like Dr. King, but you need foot soldiers and local leaders who bring the people together and take up the collection and call the meeting. To keep it going. But, you know, what is leadership these days? And like yesterday, my friend Tim DeChristopher, who's an environmental activist from Utah, he published a thing saying, forget leadership. And I just don't think that's ever worked. We need everything, and we need everybody, and everybody's got a gift to bring. And this is the dialogue I've been having with Joan Baez. She says, you can't organize. And I say, then it's not, doesn't, that's not true. Every movement was organized, but it does become organic at some point. And so, but it's just something that we as a community and a movement need to keep struggling with. And there's various different types of movements, you know, leaderless or consensus building movements. But if you have a charismatic leader, that can be really helpful too. So I don't think there's a clear answer. I think we have to be as nonviolent as we can to one another, especially as activists and organizers. It's hard when you disagree with one another, but to really make friends with each other and give each other a lot of slack. And but we do need, like, Reverend Barber is such a gift. He's such a charismatic speaker, and he's calling for the new Poor People's Campaign, but he needs a whole fleet of activists organizing around with him, and he doesn't have it as much as he should. So that's why we need all kinds of people doing all kinds of things. I hope that's not too vague, but I'm trying to encourage us all. In effect, all of us have to be leaders. It just looks different, you know?
Yeah, the Jesus Seminar, Marcus Borg, I tend to agree with him after 4 years in close study with Sermon on the Mount and other gospel passages, that he was against the domination system. Mm-hmm. He was against the Pharisees and the rich and the powerful, mm-hmm. lording it over other people because they're cutting themselves off from the power of the people. Mm-hmm. They're cutting themselves off from life itself. Mm-hmm. That's creating their own hell. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's the central message of the gospel and groupism. Mm-hmm. When my group is better than your group creates all the problems. Mm-hmm. You cannot find a violence problem on this planet. It doesn't come down to my group is better than your group. And that's why he said you have to leave the family, you have to leave all these loyalties to these various and sundry groups that think that they're better than the other group, and have your loyalty only to us, the people of the planet.
Amen.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We have a question in the front row.
Hi. I want to thank you so much for giving us a pretty good little history lesson here on going back sort of to the beginning of how this all really got started. But one thing that you mentioned was how you were kind of attacked for at the time of the Klan. And I heard Reverend Barber speak in Milwaukee mm-hmm. About 2-3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I never knew, and I know that many people in the room probably didn't know either. And that is that the Klan really organized and got started really to go after white people that were standing with the people that were marching and Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's something that we should all really know how it really originated, that it was about, you know, whites that were standing together. And the last thing I just wanted to mention, too, was when you talked about, you know, a movement and a march that's, you know, includes, that's about everybody, all of us. And the New York Climate March in 2014, my husband and I went to that march. Mm-hmm. And you know, the night before, we were in St. John's Church. Mm-hmm. And they thought maybe there was going to be 100,000 people mm-hmm. in that march. And I'm telling you, it was just amazing that it was 400,000 people. And everybody did show up. And that's what we need. I mean, that's really what we need to keep going for. So thank you so much for...
Thank you.
For everything that you've taught us tonight.
Well, we just need everything, small and big. I was saying at dinner, and I write about in the book that I was asked to be the coordinator. There were, I think, 5 different strands within the march. So I coordinated the peace and disarmament section connected to the march, and we thought, yeah, 100,000 people. But I was telling the story. I think it's in the book, too. So I invited Peter Yarrow, Dennis Kucinich, Dar Williams, and a few people to be on our stage on Central Park West, you remember? And we hired an 18-wheeler and the big sound system and had their stars. And this truck didn't show up. We were laughing. You know, I'm telling for you who do organizing, wow, was that a setback for me. So I just feel, I have such conflicted feelings about that day. And there's Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and he just starts playing in the street. But then the crowd got so big that it got kind of scary. And it could never have gotten the truck in anyway. And so many people. We just have to keep organizing, organizing, organizing. And there's going to be mistakes. And if 100 people show up, or 400,000, or a million in D.C. last week, this is going to be the rest of our lives. This is the way forward, Dr. King said. Grassroots movement building. And you've been doing that here in Madison. Thank you. And don't give up. We have time for one more. I'm sorry I went on so long. I got carried away. I know it's almost midnight, and you've been very nonviolent, I have to admit.
So we'll let Judy ask the last question here. I just want to let folks know that they can sign up for Campaign Nonviolence, the table outside, and then Father John will be sitting here and able to sign books for folks for a little bit after we're concluded. So
thank you. Yeah, we have these sign-up sheets, and we have a weekly announcements of all of our organizing and connections around the country and thoughts on nonviolence. If you'd like to get them, they come on Saturdays for free. Please sign up. I'd love that. Yes.
Well, so this isn't exactly a question. It's another plug.
Okay.
Two really cool things that are happening here in Madison are mutual aid networks. That's a national thing. It's alternative economy kinds of stuff, not familiar to you.
Yeah.
You've heard of them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. It started here.
Great.
And just for everybody here in the crowd to know about the whole big restorative justice push here in Madison that's getting started as well.
So thank you, thank you, thank you for all the great work you're doing. And we're going to work for peace and justice to the day we die. And we're going to carry on Dr. King's legacy by rising to the occasion and making these connections of nonviolence in our lives like never before, and really go deeper into oneness with creation. I think this is a great blessing and a great challenge and a great gift. And thanks for your patience with me. All the best. Carry on.
See you.
You've been listening to part 2 of a presentation by John Deere on peace and nonviolence. Have you listened to other recent episodes? In mid-July, we hosted John Deere part 1. In late June and early July, we hosted Bill Ryerson on the important topic of population. He's from the Population Institute and Population Media Center. Well, do listen to them, because these are such timely subjects. And stay tuned to our next one, our next podcast, that is, in which Grace Jerry will be talking about how she switched in her lifetime from being the product of a kind of imperialistic missionary work that was that has been a part of the church history, not any kind of a part to be particularly proud of, but how she became a liberationist in her thinking in Latin America, and what an enormous change that makes in the way we do missionary work. When I say we, when the Christian Church does missionary work in the 21st century. So that'll be our next episode.
Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good podcast, Simple Living Works podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events such as Non-Conform Freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Well, please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Well, time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we'd like you to know. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics, One Earth, and Simple Living Works blogs. We post new nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works Podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the Common Good Podcast and Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.